You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 30 January, Apple results due after US market close. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from Cape Town via Gauteng. On the show today, I'm Robin Cabela from Perpetua Investment Managers. The high prop update, not bad, not bad at all. Not blocking the lights out, but not a bad update. And I wonder what he thinks generally about REITs after a strong run last year. We have MPC decision this afternoon. Will we get another rate cut? What about the rest of the year? Importantly, FOMC, the Fed, paused last night. Dr. Rudolf Buerta, the Ultron FinTech Household Resilience Index. I'm curious if we're seeing any sign of green shoots. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Africa Bank's new route to the JSE. Management explains the reason behind delaying its listing to 2028. Business Day, Citigroup bets on a turnaround at Absa. Multinational investment bank has an 8.2 billion rand stake in what they call undervalued SA Group. Morning markets, US is red, S&P down 0.5%, NASDAQ off 0.25%. The East is, well, green. We've got Sydney up 0.6%, Tokyo 0.2%, but Hong Kong and Tencent both closed for Chinese New Year. Commodities mixed, gold is flat at 2,798. Brent is red at 76.59. PGMs are green, platinum 991. Palladium 984. The rand is 18.54. Bitcoin 102,100 and top 40 opening call. We're looking for a green open, about 120 points or 0.1% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Rob Hello from Perpetua Investment Managers. Lord, I appreciate the time this morning. The high prop operational update yesterday. It's the 6 months ending December. The SA portfolio saw tenants turnover up almost 5%. Eastern Europe up almost 9%. What do you make of the numbers? Certainly, my sense was not bad.
Hi, good morning, Simon. Great chatting again. I thought it wasn't a bad outcome, particularly in Eastern Europe. I think actually it's quite strong there with both in Croatia and Bulgaria, where private consumption is growing quite strongly. I think the inflation from 2023, as it's come down, you had wages up, interest rates are falling, and so consumers are feeling a lot more confident, and I think that's buoying that spend. I think domestically it was what you saw certainly in December, and you've seen it across the retailers, is a decelerating trend. I think one sees in turnover growth. I think the, across the board, you could say that the December numbers were, particularly Christmas was disappointing. And I guess there are a couple of drivers to that. Mm-hmm. I was just looking through some industry data and associations data, and it would seem as though, so across the categories, menswear has been quite strong, beauty very strong, so that's quite a popular category that's grown. Kids and baby, interestingly, kind of year on year was flat, which may be some demographics there where people are potentially having less children possibly driving that. I think what's also interesting, a lot of people expected to see significant impact from two-part, and then I guess from the numbers we're seeing, it's not particularly clear that it's had a big impact. I think when one can see, in context, if withdrawals landed at $250 billion, South Africa is almost a 5 trillion consumption economy, so it, on its own, I guess it was probably percent of consumption, and probably quite a lot of that went into savings and paying down debt. And so it hasn't really been the needle mover that I think a lot of people thought it was going to be. And then I'd probably say the last thing is just, this food versus fashion trend, which I think we saw from the Woolies results, is that I think with the high cost of living, you know, and the high cost of food that people are having to make sacrifices, and probably fashions is where they can cut some of the discretionary spend.
Yeah, I take your point. I can carry on wearing that shirt. It might be, I don't know, getting a little old, but it's still going to do its job in a sense. If we look more broadly at REITs, I mean, a really, really strong 2024 from them. They're still at discount to net asset value. There's still some decent high single digit, and in some cases, low double digit yields. Is there still attraction here, or has it really run and kind of got to its sort of a fair value, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it's been... I would have to be honest and say that I was surprised how well REITs did last year. It's always with hindsight, when you look back, and probably the re-rating that happened in government bonds, so bond yields falling had a big impact on the REITs the most. When you look at the kind of earnings and the fundamental growth, you're probably not getting more than 5-6% earnings growth across the board. And I guess for us, the question then becomes, can we find other companies that are growing at faster than 5-6%? And we think we can. We do think there are some REITs that are well positioned. So, if you think about REITs that are developing properties, Mall of Africa and around that that area, industrial REITs that are also showing quite a lot of growth, and then as well as some ones that are exposed to Eastern Europe, where the growth rates are higher. So I would definitely say what we're looking for is earnings growth ultimately from the REITs, and we do see some pockets of growth. But generally speaking, we think we can find other equities that can beat that 5-6% growth that we're seeing from the REITs.
Yeah, I like that logic. I'm 5-6, but I agree 100% there. There is others out there that can do us that sort of number, which maybe says REITs as a whole, there might be some pockets of difference. But we'll leave that there. And Robin Nkabela, Perpetua Investment Managers, always appreciate the early morning time. Give you money, smoother returns with StanLib Asset Management. The StanLib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Dr. Roelof Botha, the Altron FinTech Household Resilience Index. This is Q3 for 2024. Roelof, appreciate the early morning time. Let's start on a positive note, and that is that the private sector employment has increased and is actually finally at higher levels than before COVID. We've got the COVID jobs back, I suppose we can say. And whilst we still have chronic unemployment in South Africa, that is a good sign from the index, even if it's a small a green shoot.
Yes, absolutely. I was thrilled when we finally managed to beef up employment creation in the third quarter of last year, because leading up to the third quarter, it was quite pathetic. And one of the main reasons for that, of course, is the restrictive monetary policy. We have the highest interest rates in the world, and it doesn't make any sense to me.
Absolutely. I want to come to that in a bit, because, of course, we've got MPC later. Has remuneration followed? I mean, if we're seeing employment pick up, I mean, are we seeing more money being paid in remuneration as we see more people entering the workforce?
Yes, it has picked up, not quarter on quarter, but certainly year on year. There has been a marginal increase. And just on the side, it's also interesting to note that if you look at the average salaries that are earned by people that apply for mortgage for home loans, that took a nice upward. That started a nice upward trend a couple of quarters ago, and especially in the fourth quarter as well.
The household debt costs, however, I mean, that is a percentage of income that still remains very elevated. I mean, South Africans are indebted. To your point earlier, that debt is costing a lot of money.
Yes, when COVID hit us, obviously the central bank, as most central banks, I suppose all of them that are functional in the world, started lowering interest rates. And at one stage, households were sacrificing 6.7% of their disposable incomes to pay for debt costs. Which is a fair amount. That's until the first quarter of 2022. But then the central banks all over the world, and they were severely criticized by several leading economists, including Joseph Stiglitz, a Nobel Economics Prize winner. I've been singing exactly, you know, on the same storyline and chords when he said that. Why are they trying to fight an inflation problem which was caused more or less exclusively by a 700%? I'm going to repeat that, 700% increase in the cost in freight shipping charges. And just for the listeners, I just want to inform them that 80% of all tradable goods get shipped by the ocean, not by air. And that caused havoc with inflation all over. And it's interesting, but South Africa's inflation rate, CPI, peaked at just above 7%, whereas it peaked at between 10 and 15% in most of our key trading partners. And one of the key reasons for that is that food, which is by far the largest single consumption expenditure item of people all over the globe, in South Africa is a huge net exporter of food. We should build a monument for our farmers, quite frankly. But that 6.7%, Simon, went up to 9.1%. And I did a quick calculation. Since the first quarter of 2022, when this started increasing, if it had stayed at 6.7%, and it could have stayed there if the rates hadn't gone sky high, then consumers would have had 200 billion rand, that's with a B, more to spend over this period. And that's the reason why the economy is not growing. It's not very complicated.
Yeah, and that number fits. We're chatting with Lwabo a moment ago, and he's talking around 50 billion from the two pot. And here we're talking around a number that is 4x that size. We also see another massive squeeze is, of course, capacity utilization in the manufacturing sector. That is not yet back at pre-COVID levels, and that really does just tell a story. I mean, again, this is an economy that used to be a manufacturing hub around, I mean, particularly the mining industries.
Yes, Simon, I think you know this, but I just want to tell the listeners as well that I don't think they can fully understand my frustration with the Monetary Policy Committee, because what has happened since they started raising rates is that your level of unutilized capacity in manufacturing, which is a huge, huge sector, has just increased. So what happens here is that you are now spreading your fixed overhead costs over fewer units of production. Mm-hmm. So what this means is that the restrict aggravating supply side inflation, cost push inflation. And my first year students understand this, but apparently the MPC don't understand this. It's as if they are anti growth. I don't understand this. Very frustrating.
And we are seeing real life. I mean, we've had some green shoots over the course of the last year from consumers. But I mean, at the end of the day, the South African consumer, for myriads of reasons, some of them being massively high rates, I mean, our consumer remains severely under pressure. We have seen trading updates from a number of the local retailers. They are positive, yes, but they are single digit positive pretty much across the board.
Yes, it was very encouraging to see the November total retail trade data from Stats SA. So for the 3 months, September, October, November in 2024, year on year, general dealers in real terms, the retail spending at general dealers was up by 9.4%. And general dealers are 44% of the weighting. The data is slightly misleading from the perspective of the different types of retailers, pharmaceuticals, textiles, furniture, hardware, etc. Because you can buy hardware, painting, and paint at general dealers as well, and you can buy textiles and clothing and footwear there as well. So, but that was very encouraging. And the furniture and appliances, that section, which is relatively small, 4.4% of the total, but as I said, some of that is also finds its way at general dealers. That was up 12%, double digit in real terms, year on year. So there is definitely life in the economy. I like to believe that a lot of people have postponed, especially because of the two-pot system. They've decided, okay, I'm going to dip into this a little bit because I do need a new car or a better second-hand car in my case. And then I'm going to have to work a little bit longer, which is good for the economy, quite frankly. But I mean, the interest rate thing, if they can just lower rates a little bit quicker and a little bit more, with a larger, not this 25 Mickey Mouse stuff, 25 bucks Mickey Mouse stuff. The economy is asking for that. We need to unleash demand. It's there. It's latent. But we need to unleash that. And I don't know how we're going to get sense into those five members of the Monetary Policy Committee. I really don't know. In Afrikaans, I wens ek wel 'n paar klappe gee. Sorry for sounding aggressive.
Yeah, we hold thumbs for the 3 o'clock meeting. A last question. We had the Fed pause last night. Does that make sense to you? I mean, they've cut, they did some aggressive cuts. Their rates obviously much lower, and their inflation has been edging higher away from their 2% target. Did the pause last night, does that sort of fit fair enough?
Yes, I believe one needs to look at the real interest rate, and that's the U.S. real interest rate. Benchmark commercial lending rates minus the CPI is acceptable. In South Africa's case, it's more than double that. If you take our real interest rate, it is currently, as we speak, Simon, 8.3%. This is frightening. When Jill Marcus, who became a colleague of mine at Gibbs, when she was the governor of the Reserve Bank, during her five-year term of office, the average real prime rate, prime minus CPI, was 3.1%. And the economy, the South African economy, grew at 2.6% on average during those 5 years. Now our real interest rate is 8.3%, the highest in the world, and the economy is not growing, hardly growing. Does one have to do to convince these people that we need a real prime rate max of about 5% in this country? They are way behind. And if you look at the benchmark long-term interest rate in this country, the 10-year government bond yield, that has declined by 220 basis points. They've given us a measly 50. These guys are behind, and it's as if they are blind to this reality.
Yeah, and even if we, for the third quarter GDP, even if we remove the agriculture, which was a shocker number, our growth was, 0.4%, which is pretty much as close to zero. We'll leave it there, Dr. Roelof Botha. I always appreciate the early morning time. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
That's it for today. We were chatting with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss yesterday, talking about the DeepSeek AI and its impact on the AI tech stocks, which frankly saw massive sell-offs, a bit of a bounce on Tuesday, but then more selling again last night. Not as aggressive, and I noticed the likes of Nvidia are not yet back at the Monday lows. So we will see how that plays out. We asked you, how worried should Nvidia shareholders be? Almost half said too early to tell. A third said very worried. The rest said, nope, not worried at all. Everything will be fine. Viv did make the point that you get better, well, more demand with better AI products. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole Masekla, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow, the Paris Agreement.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.